This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Hello and welcome to Uprise Radio with your hosts Koshin and Zan.
I'd like to start by acknowledging we are broadcasting on the unceded and sovereign lands of the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people. This always was and always will be Aboriginal land, and I pay my respects to elders past, present and emerging for 60,000 plus years of custodianship and care and storytelling and resistance. Always was, always will be.
Today we wanted to talk about Albanese's big world tour. He has been gallivanting around the Atlantic and just had a drop by in Abu Dhabi on the way home. He has said a lot of things that are worth noting and worth discussing. So we wanted to talk about them. And I feel like I have listened to Albanese talk enough for a lifetime in the last week. He has made so many public statements and done so many interviews in the past week. It's almost impressive, the output, the amount of interviews.
I feel like I keep thinking that it feels somewhat akin to a musical tour and just imagining him with a backing band of bass guitars with the amount of performances that have been happening.
Yeah, it is. I think there is a good analogy there. Yeah, he's got the band with him. He's got an entourage of Labour inner circle people. It's been interesting to see all the people behind him, the deep Labour party members, not the elected officials, but the real Labour purists.
And then also us following behind on the internet, furiously screenshotting every statement we can find, sending it to one another, being like, did you see this?
Yeah, he's had a lot to say. And I guess we should start with the big one, which was the UN General Assembly speech, which initially I thought it would be good to do an episode talking about the UN General Assembly, the whole thing. It's my favorite week of the year when everyone gets together and you get to see all of the characters, all of the different representatives, how they all interact. They're all having fun. They're all making their interesting speeches that are often internally contradictory. They're all doing their meetings on the sidelines. But Albanese just said so many things that we thought it might just be better to just, let's just keep it at home. Let's just talk about our own PM and his speech. I just wrote down a couple of quotes from his speech, which went for, I think it might have gone a little bit over time, which is normal. One of my favorite parts of the procedure of the UN is that they are given 15 minutes to talk. But because they are also all world leaders, there is no mechanism to remove them from the microphone once they start speaking. That would be a huge incident if someone was escorted away. So,
lest we have a 50-minute speech from Trump.
You really can. Trump took advantage. Trump really went for the sort of the standard overtime speech. I can't remember who has the longest, but there are some very notable, very long, very overtime speeches. But 19 minutes is very respectable and acceptable, I think, as a time frame.
I do think it would be interesting as a boycott idea just to see how long one could continuously talk for, considering being removed from that podium doesn't seem to be a possibility. You can just keep going. Mm,
a filibuster. It would be good to see someone try to filibuster the UN. So he said a lot of things. The thing I've noticed about his speeches, what he says, is often the substance of what he's saying can sound quite good. It sounds fine when he says that we need to uphold international law, etc., but it just doesn't match up with reality and it doesn't match up with our track record. Early on he talked about how the UN is an institution designed to respect every country's sovereignty. He talked about how the UN belongs to all of us. He made a lot of mention about, yeah, sovereignty and respect of borders and national boundaries, but then also made several mentions of the fact that we are principally allied to the United States, who routinely violates the sovereignty of other countries, who break international law repeatedly at whim or whenever they feel like it.
I think one doesn't even need to even look to the US, considering the sovereignty that is maintained on these lands are completely unjust as well. To be critiquing the US is one thing, but to have no recognition of the sovereignty that is unlawfully held here is another.
Which was sort of touched on in the speech. He talked about how I don't know the exact quote, but the standards of the UN, it starts at home. You have to build on that respectful law at home, and then obviously there's a lot to say on Australia's own, how we continue to practice our own continuation of this settler colonial project. Where is the legality in that? Where is the justice in that? It's not, I don't think we are setting a shining example for other countries.
Yeah, and constant hats off to Robbie Thorpe and the work of Crime Scene Australia for bringing that to the International Courts of Justice as well.
Another great quote was that wars are often started by countries who imagine there is something to gain. The more we do to reinforce the architecture of peace and prosperity, the more we remind nations of everything they stand to lose, which is it's an incredible statement for a country that has ignored every UN statement, every UN group that has come out and declared what Israel is doing a genocide, has repeatedly, publicized war crimes committed by Israel. And the framework that he's talking about, the architecture of peace, is the international sanctions regimes, the things that countries can do other than war to bring other countries back in line. But we are not sanctioning Israel. We are not maintaining that architecture of peace at all. It is completely one-sided. It's as long as you're on our side of the fence, you are basically free to do whatever you'd like.
I think it's one thing to have an economic system of war that really benefits capitalism, and I feel like that's stuff that already has been seen so much, but the double nature of having UN recognitions of Palestinian statehood on the 21st of September and less than 24 hours later there being new contracts with Israeli weapons manufacturers such as Elbit Systems from so-called Australia is such a bizarre contradiction to have both at the exact same time.
I think it just really highlights the contradiction and the absurdity of it. I mean, who is this for? Who is he even speaking to? These things aren't secret. They're done publicly. The contradictions are available for anyone to see. I'm really not sure. It's just a thing to say. It's actually completely hollow and substanceless.
And I suppose their architecture of peace, perhaps is a thing that does include ongoing contracts with weapons manufacturers. And it also makes me think of what the 20-point plan for Gaza looks like in terms of their architecture of peace and how completely different that would look if people were centering the self-determination and the rights of Palestinian people in designing what that plan would look like for themselves, as opposed to like Tony Blair and Donald Trump or like Albanese kind of weighing in on how to, there was a quote around breaking the cycle of violence in the Middle East.
Yeah, it's incredible to talk about sovereignty And, you know, national sovereignty is the highest thing to be held up, is the most sacred. And then a week later, come out publicly backing Trump's new peace plan, as he calls it, which, yeah, gives no sovereignty to the Palestinians, and is the clearest example of a neocolonial project. It's almost not even neocolonial. It almost is just colonialism. I mean, you're installing these Western leaders as the as the heads of this sort of just stateless organization that's going to just manage the population of Palestine without giving them any sort of autonomy.
What I found interesting was also looking at the way that Albanese would, position so-called Australia in regards to what I feel like a lot of reporting is calling the conflict in the Middle East, what was said a lot in the speeches, and the idea that Australia is this kind of middle power that is very far removed from the conflict is such a convenient position away from accountability, and perhaps just like not acknowledging the huge amount of contracts and relationships and ties that keep Australia very wedded to the conflict, and how it's not distant at all. There are so many ties, and I think the economic ties are ones that keep coming up, especially like the new contracts, but there's so many other things around the way that relationships are built that seem less visible, but they all make us very close to not just a conflict, but a genocide and being complicit in the genocide.
Definitely. Which he would say that Australia is not a, you know, major player in the Middle East, et cetera, which then is
the middle power.
Yeah, which is completely contradicted by a lot of these statements, which he says, if ever we had the luxury of imagining that breaches of international law were not our concern, or that conflicts and turmoil in another part of the world could not affect us, those days are long gone. I mean, is that not, if somebody had said that in reply to him when he was explaining his theory that we can't affect conflict in the Middle East, that we're not major players in Israel's genocide, he would have pushed back and said that's delusional. But these are his words. It's like he's arguing with himself publicly. It's really, yeah. And a similar quote, what happens in the world matters to the people. Oh, sorry, different quote. But yeah, he's said multiple things in this speech that, bring home the fact that, yes, we are connected to all of these conflicts around the world, to these wars, to the genocide in Gaza, that they are... That they do affect us, even in Australia, but then he doesn't actually do anything about it. He still maintains the position that we're in right now. He hasn't actually fundamentally changed our relationship in any way. So these are nice words, and some of the speech was nice. Not all of it. It wasn't even I wouldn't even say it was a great speech. Definitely not top 10 UN speeches, but even the niceties that he said aren't even backed up by policy. It's just sort of nice things to say, campaign slogans.
Yeah, I think on the topic of nice things to say, something I found really interesting was looking at one speech I did do my furious screenshotting on was around a UK Labour speech.
Yeah.
And the mention of helping to secure peace on Ukraine's terms, and how radically different that phrasing is when talking about the genocide in Palestine. There was no mention of securing peace on Palestinian terms, and the ongoing difference of how there's like an appreciation of what it means to help secure peace on the terms of a people, but then that's just not applied to other situations. And it's jarring to look at.
Definitely. It makes your head spin a little bit to try to keep it all together, to try to follow the through line and understand the logic, because it's not logical. It just jumps around, like the message jumps around so much, it's just so hard to keep track of.
So if we were to zoom out, are you able to clue listeners in on like where the key spots were that Albanese went on his
Grand Tour? The three major spots were he went to New York City for the UN and did some interviews on the side of that. The next major stop was Scotland for his, there were two major ones. I don't know which one was supposed to be the primary one or if any of them were meant to be a kind of on the side, but he was meeting with the king, our king. We should never forget that we have a king in this country, and that we should really never let go of the absurdity of that. It's just, I think, so important and should be daily reminders. He then went to a UK Labour meeting and gave a speech to a room full of, or a hall full of, Labour members from the UK, but also that entourage of Australian Labour members. And then he had a short stop off in Abu Dhabi on the way home.
Which is where supermarkets come in now.
Yeah. So the Abu Dhabi trip didn't seem to have a major event planned. He sort of seemed to just kind of do a bit of a tour, spoke to some leaders about Palestine and backed Trump's peace plan. I do want to just quickly note he's talked about a ceasefire in Gaza a lot. I do think it's worth noting that the term ceasefire, I think, really has been co-opted by liberal politicians in the last year or so to mean something very different. I mean, when people are calling for a ceasefire, they're calling for the fighting to stop today, for it to end. But when Albanese says that he wants a ceasefire, it is essentially, when he clarifies what he means, it is for an Israeli victory and for Israeli domination. These are not the same things. Even though they're using the same words, they're saying ceasefire. They're coming out and saying, Kamala Harris, I think, might have been the first one to realize that you could just do that when she was campaigning for president, that you could just get up on stage and say, we need a ceasefire in Palestine. But then what that actually means is not what people mean when they say we need a ceasefire in Gaza today.
Especially the difference in, I don't know if de-weaponizing is a word, I can't think of what the correct word is, but the need for weapons to be taken away from Hamas, but for that not to be an equal consideration for the IDF.
Yeah.
For there to be a one-sided alteration of kind of demilitarization, which seems so different to what any concept of ceasefire is. But again, it's like we're talking about an architecture of peace that makes no sense. And it makes sense that the word ceasefire in that picture therefore makes absolutely no sense.
Yeah, I mean, it's the difference between peace and justice. It's just they want an occupation that's quiet, essentially, is what they're trying to get to. He's calling for a ceasefire, but he's calling for Israel to control the region and for there to be just nothing for people to yell at him about. I mean, that really does seem... He talked about protesters a lot on his speech, on his tour as well, which I always think is interesting, how annoyed he is at protests. He talked about it at the Labour, in his Labour speech, about the difference, how the Labour Party understands that protesting doesn't do anything.
So, like, which is a really bizarre thing to have in the context of what's happening in the UK at the moment, with the immensity of protesting that is occurring by people. I was watching footage just the other night of so many people getting carried away by police forces as they continue to protest, and like the work of Palestine Action in continuing to push for BDS. Thinking about that in the context of yeah, quotes around this UK speech where Albanese mentioned the Labour Party has never been, you know, it's not a theoretical or a rhetorical project.
Mm.
And yet you have protesters that are, I think, really making a lot more impact.
Mm. Yeah, it goes to the root of the modern Labour Party and the transition of the Labour movement into the Labour Party, as it now in the UK and in Australia you have Labour Party governments, the UK not as strong. In Australia, the Labour Party is the strongest party in the country by a wide margin. The coalition is falling apart. And what do we have to show for this massive Labour majority, these multiple states run by the Labour Party? Like, not a whole lot, because the compromises that they've had to make in order to gain power have meant that their project has become essentially meaningless and not what the initial intention was. So now you have a party that's supposed to represent the interests of Labour. It's in government. There's no one to stop them from, you know, making broad changes, saying that there's now a universal right to strike, unleashing the power of the unions, but they don't want to because it's not in their interest anymore. They don't actually want to do that. So, you know, great, you did it. You got the power. You're not a rhetorical project anymore. But what are you actually doing with that power?
I think if we're talking about things falling apart, I really also just need to mention the radical liberals in Congress attempting to shut down the government and the idea of transgender for everybody. Because I think when the element of absurdity arises within me in terms of politics just decomposing completely and looking at political parties, when we get to the point where it's transgender for everybody, I start to feel good again, because it's like we've come full circle.
Yeah,
I want to advocate transgender for everyone. The absurdity, I'm with you now, finally.
Yeah, it's a wild quote.
Men competing in women's sports? What has the world come to?
I don't know what I don't know what the Republican Party is doing anymore. They seem to, I don't know. Maybe you can speak to it more, but yeah, they seem like they are losing the plot a little bit. They don't seem to know what they want.
And I think so are we. Maybe I feel like reflecting on the week's events, for me definitely, I keep coming back to the idea of just an international freak out. I was going to try play Le Freak by Chic, but I did not have time. But yeah, he's hoping that next week has more justice in the chaos.
Yeah, we did have a promise for some good news. Don't know if we came up with any for this one.
I think transgender for everybody feels like good news for me, though.
Yeah,
I feel
we'll take
like
that.
I might not be the majority there.
Yeah.
Do we have confidence in trying to play a song live?
Yeah, we'll try.
This
and
is
get,
a vulnerable thing to do with everyone, but we're gonna.
Well, maybe we'll just, we're almost at the end, actually. Maybe we'll just talk for a bit more and then we can just play us out in a bit. We will, should note, just finally, the other big news from his tour is that he met with the King and he has come out and publicly declared that there will be no referendum to become a republic, that he's not interested in trying to make Australia a republic in his term as Prime Minister. And I just think that if ever there was a missed opportunity, if ever there was a ball being dropped, it is that. I just think, why not? I mean, yeah, he's too scared, I guess. He doesn't want to do it.
I was really hoping you were going to say he met with the King and they've decided to put an album out.
That would be
nice. It's going to be really good.
Yeah. One of them has a podcast. Doesn't the King have a podcast now? I think they might. The royal family, I don't know what they do. They just kind of, you know, he's the largest landowner in the world. That's a little fun fact.
Wow.
Technically, King Charles, largest landowner in the world. I do want to, just on the Republicans, I do want to give a quick mention to Pete Hegseth, the Department of War the leader of the newly named...
I'm glad we finally got to say that on air.
Yeah, Department of War, the name, I don't think it's official yet. I think it still has to be put through their Congress, but they have an interesting system over there where they just kind of do stuff and then they figure out how to make it legal later, which... I kind of
understand that.
Yeah, take notes. If you're one of these center left liberal parties in the world, why, like, it seems like conservatives get to just do whatever they want.
We can remake the laws afterwards. Yeah. It's fine.
Albanese could just come in and say we're a republic, and then work back from there. Like, you can actually just do that, it seems. But they've renamed it to the Department of War, and the Department of Defense, they've renamed it to the Department of War. And they had a big meeting with all of the generals in the United States of America, which some of the generals were saying this should be very important. I hope this is very important because, among other things, this is a huge security risk to get every single general, the entire military apparatus into one place.
And a catering nightmare, surely.
Yeah. Oh, I can only imagine. But he seems to have just... gone on stage and rambled about how the military is too woke now, insulted them, made a bunch of comments. And I watched some of it and I really got the sense that if somebody wanted to make the US military do a coup, that would probably be what you would do, is you would get them all in one room and insult them all. Because I cannot imagine that the sentiment in the high-ranking military officials in America is going to be that they are fans of this administration now, when they're kind of just bringing their strange, vaguely, like what they would call anti-woke agenda to the military, and the United States military, I mean, the most powerful military in the world, who are very insulated and really are able to do a lot of whatever they want. Now they're being dictated to by this guy, Pete Hegseth, who really does not have the respect or the vision to do these things. It'll be interesting to see what happens, but I wouldn't be surprised if there was real dissent after this.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's like the agenda in the campaign is not this like palpable physical security threat. It's like the fear that wokeness is the new security threat, and that's going to dissolve us all from the inside. So we got to meet and talk about it.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe wokeness will be the thing that dissolves the military.
Maybe in a way, if they're, you know, the Trump was talking about the enemy within again, which is
very Fanon.
Yeah, and
I'm sure he's read so much. I'm just so sure.
Yeah. Yeah, Trump. Trump loves some radical literature. It is scary. I mean, you don't like to see it, that they're talking about the enemy within. They're obviously going to be persecuting the most marginalized. I mean, they already are persecuting the most marginalized, but they might be mobilizing the military soon to attack the most vulnerable members of American society. But something to keep an eye on and something interesting that's happened in the last 24 hours that's definitely worth noting, I think.
The psychological campaigns. Mm. And I'm also just proud of us that we managed to get our yap into a beautiful 30 minutes.
Yeah.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast. If you found it valuable, please consider donating or subscribing to support independent community radio. To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au.